Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Mixed Bag Radio. This is Chris Hall sitting in for Pete Fornatel on location at SIR Studios in New York City with my special guest today, Al Anderson.
Got me a summer job up at dawn, mowing lawns, had to paint a fence or two. Saved up enough to buy a Fender Telecaster, custom painted Robin's egg blue. We're all gonna be stars, chicks, beers, and bars. Pawn shop guitar, pawn shop guitar, pawn shop guitar. It wasn't very long before Johnny found a bass, traded Lucky in his 10-speed Schwinn. Held some auditions, we were praying for a drummer, and the 7-1 fit right in. Playing Crawford songs that everybody knew, but we threw in an original or two. We got a gig as a house band, and I'm here to tell you, man, we were really raising the roof. We're all gonna be stars, chicks, beers, and bars. Pawn shop guitar, pawn shop guitar, pawn shop guitar. Well, we practiced every night till we got really tight. We were careful not to get too good. Every night they hit the lights, we were doing something right. Banging on trunks of wood, pawn shop guitars.
Welcome, Al. How are you?
How you doing, Chris?
Good. Your first time visit to Mixed Bag Radio.
It is.
I guess we've been doing this version of the show for about 6 years, and you were one of the first people I wanted to invite on the show, and finally you're here. And I guess we had a chance to chat on the phone, and I said, oh, it's going to be an honor to have you on the show, and your response was, you sure you know who you're talking to? And we do know who we're talking to. Your new album is great, Pawn Shop Guitars. Certainly you didn't bring a pawn shop guitar with you today. What's the story behind the guitar that you're playing today?
That guitar, I've been out with Vince Gill for a good portion of the last year, this year, 2007, that's what I mean. And we were doing Jay Leno, and I was just playing these, he had his guitar rack out, you know, and I was just sitting there playing his guitar, and I went nuts over it. I was just amazed, the neck on it's like a Tele, and it's actually an acoustic McPherson, and Vince went to the factory, and he picked out the wood for his guitar, and he knew everything he wanted, and he knows guitars like it's, he's not only a great player, he really knows. I would never buy a guitar without bringing it to him. I brought him a whole bunch lately. And so he made a phone call, Vince Gilbini made a phone call, and I had the guitar in no time at all.
I imagine he can drop a dime just like the best of the New York crowd could back in the day. Although you don't go on the road much now, many of your fans know you from NRBQ days where it was 22, 23 years on the road, 200, 250 dates a year. So many people know you from that. They know you from your solo work now. The last couple of solo albums were great, the ones I got my hands on, Pawn Shop Guitars, After Hours, and was it Pay Before You Pump?
Yep.
Was the one before that. Just great albums. And then others know you for your songwriting. Before we get into that part of things, what first brought you your love of music?
My mom worked at a radio station in Hartford called WTHT, which was owned by the Hartford Times, and she had her own show. So any kids' records that came in, or even classical things like Peter and the Wolf and stuff, she'd bring home for me. So I was hooked when I was 3 years old.
What was your first instrument? When did you first learn to play?
Piano, probably. She was a piano teacher, and the piano was in the house.
And did your mom give you lessons, or were you a natural player?
No, she couldn't give me lessons. You don't take piano lessons from your mother.
No, you know, or driving lessons from your father, I think. Did you play by ear as well, or was it something you had to learn over time?
That's what I do, play by ear.
Just from the beginning, played by ear.
Yeah.
Do you remember the first song that you were able to write, whether it be the music or the lyrics of it?
It was called I Lost You. I have a recording of it, but, I mean, that was our first time in a studio.
How old were you at that time?
That's the only thing that didn't come out on that confidential thing by the Wild Reeds.
And it's a song you're still proud of as a first effort for a young musician?
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. What type of advice would you give to an aspiring young musician who has the gift that you had and still have?
As a writer or
as a writer, a musician, just...
It's tough out there. I don't even know. I wouldn't even know what to do. I can't even give anybody an advice.
We seem to do it for the love of the music, and if the business part of it comes along, it comes along.
But if you love it, just do it. You know, you can't, don't let success get in the way of your love for music. That's crazy.
Do you have interest other than music, or is it music 365 days a year for you?
365.
It shows. It shows in the songwriting and the craft and your love of performance as well.
Yeah.
With Pawn Shop Guitars in particular, and your music over the years, there's a reflection of the influences that you heard as a young musician. And can you remember the first record that you bought, or who were the earliest influences as you were 10, 11, 12 years old?
I Walked the Line, Johnny Cash. My mom got it for me, but she forgot to get the centerpiece.
Sure.
So he was wobbling all over the place.
I guess we have to explain what that is to a lot of the listeners now.
On a 45, they had a big spindle. And a lot of times when they came along, they had the speed on the record player, but not the spindle. And it was a big hole on a 78, which was a little hole. Spindle, so you try to center it, but it's, I keep a close watch on his heart. He was one of the greatest artists of our time. The Everly Brothers were a big influence on me, too. Big time. Still the greatest records ever made in Nashville.
They're harmonizing, the production, the sound, the songwriting, all the whole package.
You could tell those musicians were putting in 300%. They knew something was going down. But I was like 10 years old, or 11 years old when I heard them, and I didn't even know there was such thing as a capo, or you could tune differently. I thought that was illegal. And they had high strings, and they replaced a B string with another kind of string. So to me, it was like a wonderment that I couldn't imagine.
I suppose when you hear it, it'll be much different than when I hear it, because if you're already playing music and you do it by ear, you hear sounds that you can't imagine where they would come from, and you try to recreate them, perhaps.
Right. Nobody can read music in Nashville. I mean, most of them, they use a number system. So if you're in the key of A, that would be 1. That's the key. And 4 would be a D. So you just go A, B, C, D. You know, there's only 7 notes. So it's really, and it works great because you could, the singer might decide to change the key in the studio, and it's the same number system. They don't have to rewrite the whole chart like you would if you wrote music.
Have you worked closely with Delbert McClinton? Because I recall Delbert speaking in the same terms and talking like that as well.
Yeah.
Next song that you're going to perform is called Just a Thought, and it's interesting that Delbert's name came up because I hear his voice in that song.
Me too. He didn't do it, though.
Is that right? That seems
I gave
to be...
him 10 years.
It's a perfect song for him.
I know.
And he's certainly
tell me about
aware
it
of it. When you sat
I'm
down...
I'm throw him off the boat next year.
I don't blame you, because when I heard it, I said, that's a song that... did you write it for Delbert, or after it was written, you said, this is a song?
I wrote it with Delbert and Sharon Vaughn, who I wrote Right on Time with and Trip Around the Sun. She's a great writer. She lives here in New York. You ought to get her in here sometime.
Oh, that'd be terrific. We'd love to. So was Delbert a co-writer of the song, or you wrote it with him in mind?
No, we wrote it with Delbert. You never know if it's in mind or not. You're just writing a song.
Okay.
Sometimes he decides whether it's going to work. But every time it got down to when, yeah, I'm going to do it. Yeah, I'm going to do it. And he didn't do it.
Well, let's hear the Al Anderson version today. And maybe when he hears this show, it'll inspire him to get out there and re-record it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Just not a day goes by I don't put myself through, wondering how it might have been for me and you. I think if I still had you, I'd be a whole lot better off. But I don't know, maybe not. It's just a thought. Too many memories taking up my time. Soon as one leaves, another comes to mind. And I find myself driving past that house we should have bought. But I don't know, maybe not. It's just a thought. I shake my head and close my eyes. Something is strong, bound to be slow to die. I catch myself crying lately. It don't take a lot. Any little thing, not much, just a thought. Any little thing, not much, just a thought.
That was a live version of Just a Thought by Al Anderson, a great new song from his album Pawn Shop Guitars. Al, one thing I always like to ask the guests, why did you choose Pawn Shop Guitars as the title song for the album?
It just sounded good. That's all.
Is that an...
Yeah, it wasn't like a intellectual decision.
Do you record the album, look at all of the songs, and say, that's my favorite, or my favorite child, or the one that fits? Is it autobiographical in nature, or for you, or just for any song?
No, at the time we were writing a song for Nashville, and at the end it was too rocking for Nashville.
Well, they could slow it down a bit, but it didn't seem like a song that should be slowed down.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't have slowed it down. It just would have, what would they do? It'd just be compressed and ruined.
We talked a bit about the influences. One person that wasn't mentioned was Chuck Berry in particular. Was Chuck a big influence on you for that rock and roll country sound?
No. I didn't get Chuck Berry till NRBQ. I didn't really appreciate rock and roll till I was in NRBQ.
It's the college knowledge?
I just didn't. I don't know what I was thinking, but of course, those are the greatest rock and roll records in the world.
And when it clicked with you, you got it. I'm sure you did many covers of Chuck songs over the years.
I don't think so. Every once in a while, we'd pull one out with the cue, but...
Somebody pulled it out.
I guess Johnny B. Goode, we did something.
And what was it that hit you? Just the simplicity of the music? And
His lyrics are so good. And he's the guy that invented the... You know, everybody owes him $1 million. Everybody.
You might owe him a couple dollars for one of the songs on the new album. Do you know which song I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. It's actually... It's so Chuck Berry, I'm worried.
Now, maybe Chuck could use the song because it is so Chuck Berry, and it appealed to me immediately. And my daughter and I are in the car listening. And she said, could you play that one again? Could you turn it a little bit louder? And it's the type of song when you're rolling down the highway you want to hear loud, which is one of the many trademarks of Chuck's songs.
Yeah, but this song is actually Drinking on the Weekend is about, it's kind of me and Stephen Bruton wrote it, and it's about, we're both an AA guys, and it's about a guy that just doesn't, nothing changes in his life. He's just waiting for the weekend, does the same stuff. So it's actually about that. It's not like a party song like everybody thinks.
Well, I think it's a party song if you're...
But it is if you want it to be.
If you're 18 or 20 years old, it's a party song. If you're 60 years old, it's a sad song. Somewhere in my research, I saw you have a songwriting motto. Is that true? And did I come upon it properly? Where make dumb good?
Make dumb good. That's the secret to everything.
Would this song fit that? Especially the opening lines.
Maybe. It's a lot of words. I'm thinking Hank Williams and Little Richard and stuff like that. I mean, that guy, Little Richard's, you know, Tutti Frutti, our Rudy, Tutti Frutti, our Rudy, Tutti Frutti, our Rudy, a wop, bop, a lamb. You know, that's sold a million copies.
That's more make dumb good than...
That's making dumb good. So, ain't nobody as good as him.
No, that's for
sure.
I got
to play with him about 3 months ago.
Is that right? Where did you play with him?
There's an Imus album coming out for the ranch. And he did I Ain't Never by Webb Pierce. And he came to the session, and he was really nice to everybody.
I understand he's a nice guy. He hasn't been on the show yet, but we've had a lot of folks that have met him and played with him over the years. And
you'll have trouble getting him, but once he does, once he's here, it's going to be great.
Okay, we'll try to reel him in. Well, let's pay tribute to Chuck and give him a song that maybe he'll want to record one.
All right.
If he could do that one for us live, it'd be much appreciated.
Okay.
I get my hair cut every month or so. I cut it short and then I let it grow. I got a job 5 days a week. Monday through Friday, work, eat, and sleep. I get my paycheck and I call my friends. I do my drinking on the weekend. I call my mama every chance I get. She gets to worrying if I forget. I got a girlfriend, but I don't know. She doesn't party, think I'll let her go. I catch a movie every now and then. I do my drinking on the weekend. I do my drinking on the weekend. It's when I fall off of the deep end. You ain't see me till you see me when I do my drinking on the weekend. So if you catch me on a Friday night, I rock and roll until the morning light. Most of Saturday I can't recall. From what I hear, I really had a ball. The Monday morning I'm on the mend. I do my drinking on the weekend. It's always good to have some tell some fun. Cause life is short and work is never done. Something's coming at you every day. But there's a time for work and time for play. Works for me, so let me say it again. I do my drinking on the weekend. I do my drinking on the weekend. That's when I fall off of the deep end. You ain't see me till you see me when I do my drinking on the weekend. I do my drinking on the weekend. That's when I fall off of the deep end. You ain't see me till you see me when I do my drinking on the weekend. That's when I wind up with my long lost friend. I do my drinking on the weekend.
Chris Hall sitting in for Pete Fornatel, back with you on Mixed Bag Radio with our special guest, Al Anderson. Al, here's kind of just a weird observation. When I loaded your recent CDs into my iTunes, sometimes it's Al Anderson, sometimes it's Big Al Anderson, and then your music sometimes comes up country, most recently Unclassifiable. Were you aware of that?
It's a story of my life.
I thought that fit perfectly because you're the only music I have out of 10,000 songs that's unclassifiable. And I think that was kind of the right genre to set it in. Was that done intentionally?
I don't think After Hours is unclassifiable.
You go country on it or rock and roll?
Or is Punch Up Guitars. It's a rock and record.
So rock, pop, country?
Yeah. Rock and roll. There's no country on Pawn Shop Guitars, I can tell.
Little.
You hear it? I don't hear it.
Little twanging once in a while, but really
twanging,
straight ahead.
Twanging's okay.
Mm-hmm. More Duane Eddy twanging rock and roll than country.
Yeah. What a song with him, Duane Eddy.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah. Just meeting those guys. Phil Everly, too. I wrote two songs with him last year. But Duane, you know, funny thing about Duane Eddy is it was easy to get to a point where you could play faster than him as you learned how to play guitar, because those records are very sparse. And then then I took them out. I put them away, and I'm playing as fast as I can, you know, for all the years. And they put the records back on and go, Al, you idiot, it's not about speed.
Right, sometimes that space there is needed.
Yeah, when I went over his house, I mean, he showed me stuff that he did. It was just great, switching hands to get the Bigsby the way he wanted it to bend the notes.
When you play by ear and you learn from listening for all those years, it must be quite a revelation when, from the master himself, he can teach you something about it or show you something about how it's done.
What he showed me was, I didn't need him to be there for. It's not about speed. It's about how good your notes are you're playing.
Did you go back and play a little bit differently when you've done his songs, or it's just something?
No, I just came to the realization it's not about speed. Every once in a while I play fast still, you know.
Sure. Well, Unclassifiable is interesting, and rock and roll is interesting, but you've become much more of a country songwriter these days, as we alluded to earlier. And you write for the top dogs, really, out there. Tim McGraw, Trisha Yearwood, the Mavericks, Alabama, Jimmy Buffett, Kenny Chesney. How is it that you get your songs out there to these folks? I know you're in Nashville. I know it's a tight community, and I know you're well-respected. But when you write a particular song that you think fits for someone, do you actually drop a dime and make the call, mail it over, invite them into the studio, or a combination?
If you can get to the artist, which is not always easy. Like, I have to get to Leanne Rimes right away. I got some great stuff for her. But I don't know how to get to her, so I'm going to have to find out where she eats lunch. Because I already had a hit with her called Big Deal with me and Jeff Steele.
When you wrote Big Deal, how did you get to her?
I went to the label. My publisher got a cut.
That takes a long time to go through the label, the agents, the managers.
No, not really. She sent it right to Leanne and it got cut.
So somebody must have heard something in that song that was obvious for her.
Yeah. And Trip Around the Sun, I wrote 8 years ago and I couldn't get a cut. And I think it's probably too many chords for
Nashville.
That's
the song you're going to perform later, the Jimmy Buffett hit.
And I couldn't get a cut. It was one of the best things I ever wrote, I thought. And so I was talking to Russ Titelman, produced all those records on Warner Brothers, and he was going to produce the record, and he took it down there, and Jimmy didn't do it. So there went that. And then so I think something happened in his life where he lost a friend, and he wanted to do it. And so he did it, and it became a compilation with duets from other artists, from country guys. And so Martina McBride came aboard, and so that's how it became a duet, and it was a single.
Well, certainly it's a beautiful song, and if you lose someone, it would resonate with you, or as you're getting older, it would as well.
Yeah, I was on the ship, Delbert McClinton cruise, you know, and I did the song, and I got a note from a girl that she left me as she was on her way to drive off a bridge in Baltimore and heard the song and turned around.
Wow.
And then this lady whose husband passed away the year before brought the ashes, and I had to sing Trip Around the Sun while the captain spread the ashes. I don't know how I got through it.
You could do that one for us live. It'd be much appreciated.
Okay. I'll do it.
Here I'm singing happy birthday. Better think about the wish I made. This year gone by ain't been no piece of cake. Just another revolution. Pull it together and it comes undone. Just one more candle and a trip around the sun. I'm just hanging on while this whole world keeps spinning. And it's good to know it's out of my control. 'Cause if there's one thing that I've learned from all this living, is that it wouldn't change a thing if I let go. You never see it coming, and
always wind up wondering where it went. And only time will tell if it was time well spent. Just another revelation, celebrating what I should have done. These souvenirs from my trip around the sun. I'm just hanging on while this old world keeps spinning. And it's good to know it's out of my control. 'Cause if there's one thing that I've learned from all this living, is that it wouldn't change a thing if I let go. I think I'll make a resolution that I'll never make another one. Just enjoy this ride on my trip around the sun. Just enjoy my ride.
That was a live version from Al Anderson of Trip Around the Sun, a song that Jimmy Buffett and Martina McBride made very popular a few years back. Al, over the years, we've had some of your friends on the radio with us, Stephen Bruton, as we mentioned, Delbert McClinton, and John Hiatt. And the one thing that they seem to have in common with you is they're writing to their age, and their fans seem to be able to accept that and change along with them. The fans that have been with you for the ride through NRBQ, your solo work and your songwriting, do you find that it's one and the same person, or they're very segmented and they've been able to follow your career or else just jump on the train along the way?
No, you're just growing. The music grows, you hope. Sometimes you go backwards. You learn the value of like making dumb good. You can write a song with 100 chords, and the one with 3 sometimes is a lot better than the one with 100. I've learned. Matresa Berg is a great songwriter, but I'll come into the song that I have for her that has about 20 chords in it, and by the time she gets through with it, there's 3, and I'm really glad there's 3. She's a great songwriter. She wrote Strawberry Wine.
Do you sit in the same room together to write, exchange tapes back and forth?
No, we always sit in a room. Everybody does. No exchanging tapes. You get in there, and you 3 or 4 hours later, you usually have a song, and you might get an idea from, like, Miles Zuniga did by looking at the wall at my Airstream poster. Or he might have a title, the other guy, or I might have a title. And sometimes you can just play a couple things on guitar while you're getting ready. And the guy says, what was that? What was that you did? And that's how it starts. And you can pretty much start a song from just anywhere. We could write, That's a Nice Shirt.
You just do it, right, like that?
Yeah.
How long does it take you to write That's a Nice Shirt?
Like three or four hours, like I said, usually. Sometimes it could take all day, and like 2 days, if it's like, if you really think you got something.
Do you go back and revisit a song that you've written in 3 or 4 hours a couple of weeks later and say, I can fine-tune that, or when it's done, it's done?
Maybe, but if once you're happy with it and then somebody wants you to rewrite the word, it ain't going to happen. Never works. We did that for somebody recently, and he went back and actually used the old words.
When you wrote The Next Big Thing for Vince Gill, it was a song that he chose.
I didn't write it for him. I wrote it with him and John Hobbs.
How did that come about?
We were doing Bob asked me to do a Mothers Against Drunk Driving with Vince and him. So you can bet I played the best songs that I ever wrote with Vince Gill there. Because, you know, all the times that I'd been in, when I first came to Nashville, for years I just wanted to write with Vince Gill, you know, like everybody does. And my publisher said, you know, that's just not going to happen. He writes his own songs. And if he writes with somebody, it's somebody he's known for years and all that stuff. And he came up to me after the show and said, let's write one. But I was afraid to call him. I just was. So John Hobbs, who's his keyboard guy and producer, co-producer. So we're going to write with Vince tomorrow. I said, oh, okay. So I came up with that groove. And it took like, I've written 25 songs with him anyway. And I'm still nervous when I walk in the room. He's the best guy, best songwriter, great guitar player.
He was up in New York a couple of years ago at Radio City Music Hall. They did a tribute to Brian Wilson. And great singers, great songwriters from across the board. And when Vince Gill got up there and sang, as I recall, The Warmth of the Sun, and just beautiful.
Yeah.
Let's listen to your song that you wrote with him called The Next Big Thing, which was a...
I got to play on it, too.
Let's listen for that as well. That was The Next Big Thing by Vince Gill, song written with Al Anderson and also a title track to one of his recent albums. One thing I know you've learned from your years in the studio, value production. A while back we had Brian Wilson on the show, before that George Martin. And it was interesting to hear their observations about songwriting and taking a song into the studio and what can be done with it. How much tinkering do you do with a song and overdubs and production?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I depend on the players, and I'm thinking about making a record like that where you spend a lot of time thinking about it, maybe in harmonies and stuff. That's something I always wanted to do. But with this band, it's just, they're such great studio guys. They know exactly, and we've been playing for 15 years. I don't even have to say anything to them. It'll be produced as they run it down the first time.
Of the cast of characters you've had over the 15 years, how many of them have been the same folks that are consistent one after another? Year after year. Is it the core band?
It's Reese Wynans from Double Trouble. And Glenn Wharf was just the best bass player. Him and Chad are an amazing rhythm section. And I've had him for 15 years, so...
You just give a look to each other and you know what to do and how to do it.
Yeah, I mean, they're in studio 9 hours a day, every day. Luckily, they're really happy to play with me because then they don't have to play country. And when we do demo a country song, they know they can do anything they want. I don't care if they don't like it because I cut it in a way they wouldn't like it. I can't compromise that much.
When you write a song that ultimately is performed by a female singer, do you put yourself in the frame of mind as a female, you're going to write it, or just a great song is a great song?
No, sometimes you can write a song for both, but big deal was not in the case of that.
Some of your songs definitely written from the female perspective. Powerful Thing I could hear you doing, certainly can hear Trisha doing.
I've had a bunch of Trishas, 4 or 5 anyway, and a Powerful Thing. Tony had me come over and listen to it. You know, I just wanted to hear it. I says, let me go out and play acoustic on it. He says, no, man, we already got it. I says, no, come on, let me just go out there and put some stink on it. He says, no, man, the record's done. I just wanted you to hear it. He says, just let me run out there. You don't have to use it. And I went out there and played it, and he kept it. I was happy about it. I sang it with her, too.
Is that right? Where did you sing it with her?
On the chorus. The
on the chorus and the backup on it? Have you ever played with her out on the road?
No.
Well, let's listen to the pre-recorded version of Powerful Thing and listen for your vocals.
Did you just say
the road.
Won't come out.
Won't come out. Okay, let's listen to the studio version and keep you where you belong in the studio with Trisha Yearwood. That was Trisha Yearwood and Powerful Thing, yet another song from a seemingly endless supply of great songs from our guest Al Anderson. We'll have more with Al in just 1 minute. Chris Hall sitting in today for Pete Fornatel, back with you on Mixed Bag Radio with our guest Al Anderson. Al, when you meet a guy like me in his 40s and he grew up in the Northeast, chances are the first thing he's going to think about with live performance is Bruce Springsteen, Southside Johnny, and RBQ. That was my musical live experience.
But a lot of people think it was New England, but we were all over the place.
I assume when you did 200 shows on the road, they were all at Toad's Place, it seemed like.
Yeah, right. But it wasn't. We went all over the world. And
do you get tired of meeting the old NRBQ fans and having them ask you questions about it?
No, not now.
You look back, it was a good time in your life?
Absolutely.
What would be the best memory from those years? Do you have one or two stories you could tell?
Seeing them live when I was a fan.
So back late 60s, before 71?
Yeah, it's probably 1970. I saw him at the Capitol Theater in Springfield, and that was, you know, life-changing. Steve Ferguson, still the greatest guitar player I ever heard.
A little before my time. I came into it during your years.
But they had two albums on Capitol, one with Carl Perkins, and the very first album, to me, still is the best record. Everybody disagrees with me because, like, you can't tell when you're in the band how good it is.
Will the band reassemble and get back together?
I don't know. You have no idea. You never know.
In your bio, it had, I guess it was December of 1971, the big man joined the band.
December 10th.
December 10th. And what
opening
happened?
For Jay Giles and the Allman Brothers in Troy, New York.
And who were the bandmates at that time, and how many of them stayed through the years where I get to know the band in the
70s? Well, Joey and Terry are original.
Right.
That's it.
So Joey and Terry, yourself.
I came in and replaced Steve. Steve came back for a little bit, and we both played together, and then he left again. And there's only been two drummers, Tom Staley and Tom Martellino.
And your memories of hitting the road and traveling from place to place, where you're tired of it now, it must have been exhilarating as a younger man to go from place to place to place.
I wouldn't say that. I hate waiting. You do more waiting than anything. You could do a sound check, and then you can't leave, and, you know, wait. All you do is wait.
I guess we've had so many musicians come through here that say they're paid to stay in a hotel and to travel and do sound check, and they do a show for free.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. And it wasn't a lot of money for us, because we were like, we never had a hit, you know. They couldn't define what we were. And journalists and critics and radio doesn't like that, if they can't put you in a bag.
But other musicians could do it. Bonnie Raitt could do it. Elvis Costello could do it. So many others that admired your work and considered you a great rock and roll band.
But they weren't as diverse as we were. They had the theme going for the record, usually.
Over the years, you didn't bring as many songs to NRBQ as you've brought in subsequent years, as far as writing and recording. What was the first big song that you brought to them, or the first one that you can recall?
Comes to me naturally. It was always really popular. I didn't write that much back then. I was busy getting drunk and stuff.
it was more, I guess...
Like, I wrote probably maybe 20 songs in 15 years. Now I write 80 a year. I've written about 1,600 songs since I went to Nashville.
Right? Wow. When you look back at the quality of the songs that you wrote then, even though the quantity wasn't there, are you proud of your work and the craft that you honed through the years?
Yeah.
They
all sound good to me when I go back and listen to the Q records.
Isn't that great? I mean, that's because you can change and you do mature as a writer, but when you can go back and look fondly on those songs.
Yeah.
What year did you write Riding in My Car? That was probably as close to a hit as NRBQ.
I just listened to Don't Worry Baby for the Beach Boys. That was the inspiration for that. I think it was in 76, because I think we did it in 77. Wait a minute. 75 came out on All Hopped Up. Then they demanded the track for the Mercury record. Yankee Stadium.
And that was not considered a hit by you? It was an FM hit. I know it was on the radio.
It wasn't a hit on, I don't know about the radio. Radio was more Me and the Boys and Green Lights and stuff. But on stage-wise, Riding in My Car and Comes to Me Naturally, that was a big deal.
Would you do us the favor of playing Riding in My Car solo version? We can't get the Beach Boy-like harmonies from you.
Well, I guess I'll give you a shortened version.
Beautiful.
Everybody was talking about, and over in the corner all alone with you was the boy from last summer singing songs to you. He can't sing like I can sing, oh, it's so hard. And I still think about you every time I'm riding in my car. In my car and start riding again, and I can't find no true love. Oh, baby, it's so hard, and I still think about you every time I'm riding in my car. I still think about you every time I'm riding in my car.
That was Riding in My Car, the great NRBQ song written by Al Anderson, and just a beautiful, sweet version for us today. we can't get the band together on the road anymore. We can't get the band together, certainly in the studio today. But one of the songs we had talked about was Get Rhythm, and the Johnny Cash song, which was the B-side to I Walk the Line, you had told me earlier.
Yes, it is.
How did NRBQ adopt that song and bring it to a new
generation?
I think
that was Terry's idea. And we just rehearsed it and cut it. That's all there was to it.
And it seemed to me with the dozens of gigs that I saw, that was a staple each night.
Last song of the night, usually.
For a young guy that didn't have the flip side to I Walk the Line, that was an NRBQ song for many years until I got older.
Right.
And certainly one that brought a lot of great nights for a lot of people.
Yeah. You can hear Johnny do it on that. There's a new DVD out called Johnny Cash, The Johnny Cash Show from 1969 to 71. It's stunning all the way through, from James Taylor, Linda Ronstadt, Neil Young, Maybelle Carter, Mother Maybelle, the Everly Brothers with her father, Merle Haggard, George Jones, Loretta Lynn, Jerry Lee Lewis, Charlie Pride. I mean, it's really something.
Shows like that just don't exist anymore, and I often wonder why. I don't know if talent like that exists anymore necessarily, but it certainly was appealing television back then.
Yeah. Music's pretty much a mall now. It's just full of ish.
Yeah, I have to agree. Everything's just homogenized, and you can go from one town to another, and it's the same music, the same radio stations.
Yep.
And you're the exception, and NRBQ was the exception. What I'd like to do is listen to NRBQ's version of Get Rhythm and reminisce a little bit.
Go right ahead.
That was NRBQ and Get Rhythm, a final song of the night for many, many nights on the road for our guest Al Anderson and his former bandmates. Al, we're going to close out the visit with one more live song, and I think it's only appropriate that we bring your solo work together with your NRBQ work. And there's one song that appears on your After Hours CD that was also released by NRBQ. I wondered if you could tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, they didn't like me writing with outside guys back then. Nothing could get in, you know. And I'd written it with Gary Nicholson, called Better Word for Love. But Terry loved it so much that we did it anyway. It was on Rhino Record, Message for the Message, I believe. So it got on.
When I heard that song then and when I hear it now, it reminds me of almost the best of what Buddy Holly would write and maybe what he would have continued to write had he lived on.
Better Word for Love?
Better Word for Love.
I think of McCartney.
Really?
I think he would have liked it.
I certainly think so.
And he wouldn't have done it either. He likes to write all his own songs.
Understandably so. Do you ever think about Buddy Holly and his inspiration and what he might have gone on to write?
Love Buddy Holly. I work with a guy named Paul Kennerly in Nashville who's studied Buddy Holly to, like, you know, a max. He's got his amp that's in the Hall of Fame now. Every time I write with him, if the song has to be as good as Buddy Holly, Buddy Holly would have passed a grade on it. If it was good enough for Buddy Holly, we had a song.
Well, that's quite a high standard.
Still that way. He wrote Hillbilly Rock for Marty Stewart, and he's a great guy, and he's from England. He's a gentleman guy from England, you know, that went to the proper schools and everything.
We had Nick Lowe on a couple of weeks ago as a guest, another gentleman from England as well, and his fascination.
He knows Paul very well.
Is that right?
Oh, sure.
They would be soulmates just from the short description. It made me think of Nick right away and his appreciation of Buddy Holly and carrying that craft on even today. I'd like you to close today with the song we're talking about, Better Word for Love.
Remember, my voice is trash. I sang rock and roll for three nights here.
That's okay. It's a rock and roll show, so our audience can handle it.
It'll have character to it.
And as much as it's a love song, I look at it as a father, and we don't do too many dedications, but I'd like to dedicate it to my daughter, Jennifer, today.
Well, you've got right ahead. Hi, Jennifer.
Here's another morning. Soon she'll be waking up. I watch her and wonder if there's a better word for love. So many times I've told her it never seems enough, so I keep searching for a better word for love, mumbling, stumbling, wondering when I find a way, I know she knows there's nothing more to say. Tonight when I'm out walking, I'll ask the stars above if out there somewhere there's a bed worth for love. I'll just hold her tight till there.